This is taken up as it was announced that from time to time we shall be taking up various religious traditions in order to fulfill the most important second object of the theosophical movement, which is to make comparative study of religions in order to extract therefrom the essential truths which underlie all world religions. And having accepted it, you will be able to bring about what is called brotherhood of religions. Because the first object being universe, the nucleus of the universal brotherhood. And to bring about that nucleus, all the world cultures are studied, religions, philosophies and sciences are studied with a sole view to find a common basis, a common background, the common foundation of all world religions, and you find amazingly to be essentially the same. Not exactly the same, but of the same source. The reason is that the source of all world religions is one and the same. That is one. Now, in line of that tradition, therefore, we shall be taking up at least one of the world's oldest religions, Zoroastrianism. And it will be, of course, at one place mentioned concerning this second object, that she says that among others, she mentions specifically three, Brahmanism, Zoroastrianism and Buddhism. The study of these and deriving therefrom the essential ethical concepts. So now coming directly to this, the teachings of Zarathustra, the first question would come up, which Zarathustra? This is a very funny question, it might say. Many Parsis would be shocked if we mention it. When we say which Zarathustra, they will be saying, but Zarathustra we know, he's familiar, we are very familiar with him. We can point out to a photograph, to a picture, and there are about 10 or 20 such pictures today in Bombay. You go to any fire temple and you find they've got varieties of the pictures of Zarathustra. So which Zarathustra, if you question, it will be very, seems to be ridiculous in the eyes of an ordinary Orthodox Parsi. But the fact is, if you can refer to Dabistan and also Dasati, which is an old Zoroastrian scripture which mentions 13 Zarathustra Temo. Now Zarathustra Temo means the one who took the title of Zarathustra. So in other words, there is the one who is the founder, the true, the original, then the one who took up the title, and then perhaps the last that we know of, that is a historical or semi-historical, legendary Zarathustra, the author of Gatha, Holy Gatha. That is the last in the line. So actually, Zarathustra is a generic name, like Ved Vyasa. There are many Vyasas who are the authors of Vedic teachings. Similarly, Shankara, there are many Acharyas that came out from Shankara Acharyas. Similarly, there are many Manus. So that Manu, etc., they are the generic name concerning various individuals, various personalities who came from time to time. But they are in line, they are in parampara. And that parampara has been maintained. So those 12 Zarathustra Temas have maintained that parampara till it came in the hand of the last, historically, or as we said, legendary Zarathustra. We say historical and legendary because when you come to the age of Zarathustra, there is such a conflicting opinion among scholars, pandits, actual honest research workers. We can just say in passing that the last one is 650 BC, contemporary of Paisogaras. Then Hong says 1200 BC. Bunsen says 6000 BC. Aristotle says 6,000 years before Plato. Now Plato is 2,050 years ago, a little earlier. That means about nearly 9,000 years. But if you go into the internal evidence of the very scripture, the very language of Avastha, it comes so very close to Vedic Sanskrit. So much so really, that to be able to translate effectively and very accurately Avastha literature, you will have to make use of the knowledge of Sanskrit. So that real scholars of Avastha are also learned in Sanskrit. They will have to learn Sanskrit in detail to be able to find the key to the understanding of the one of the most ancient language that is called Avastha. And among those Avastic literature, the gathas, the holy gathas, they are the actual original wordings of Zarathustra. And it's a small little book, just like our Bhagavad Gita. Because it is almost like Bhagavad Gita in many sense, that it is in one sense it is a dialogue between Zarathustra and Avramasdha. It is monologue as well as a dialogue. It is also in a form of a discourse. So in various ways, it's such as, and it consists of only 17 chapters of 72 yasnas extant today. Out of those 21 volumes of literature that was there existing during the earliest Zoroastrian period, only few fragments are left to us today, which have been translated by Western scholars in English literature or in French and in German by the scholars 200 years ago. But most of the scholars have got that Christian bias. A Christian, being Christians and being European, they have got that Christian prejudice. With the result that much of the later translations are given a bent of a coloring of Christianity to it. So you cannot rely upon any translations so far extant today. It becomes very difficult for anybody who wants to undertake serious down-to-the-earth study of Zoroastrianism or the teachings of Zarathustra, if you want to limit yourself. Because look here, there is a difference between Zoroastrianism and teachings directly coming from Zarathustra. Because lot of things which have been added later on, which calls itself Zoroastrianism, is, you may not say pseudo-Zoroastrianism, but much of it has been interpolated, mistranslated, or exaggerated at some places and so on. So take any one very, very great mantra called Yatha Ahu Vedyo, which is equivalent to Gayatri mantra. A great mantra called Yatha Ahu Vedyo is called Amunavar mantra. There are two great scholars like Khushed Dabu, who was a theosophist. He says he has come across 32 translations of that little 21 words scripture. Only 21 words, but he has come across 32. And Iraj Tarapurwala, one of the latest one who came, he says he has come across 52 translations of that. Now how to choose from among those? Even one single sloka translated by various authors from their own point of view. A little, of course, variation, there may be a little shades of meaning change. This is true because every ancient word has got down to the earth meaning, has got a meaning which has got a psychological interpretation, you might say, a worldly meaning, a public meaning, a popular meaning, then a psychological meaning, a little higher up a mystical meaning, and then still higher up at a cosmic level. So that now we will come across words after words, and we will tell you that this word was used at a transcendental level. That word has been, same word has been used in order to mean something which is now manifest in this cosmos. And then at the individual human level. So that word like Asha, Ashoi, purity, that which represents the very beginning of the beginning, the very law which initiates the whole manifestation, which comes even before manifestation, that word is Asha, the one mantra that was uttered, what is called Avunavar, that was mentored, now uttered, which is called Shabda Brahma, which came into being, which came into vibrations, which in its turn brought about seven Avishas Pentas, and which in its turn brought about this universe. So like that, see, there are levels and levels and levels of that mantra. So in that sense, to understand actual teachings of Zarathustra becomes very difficult. So we, this student has only limited himself to the ethical concepts of Zarathustra, because that is what you find in that little book called Holy Bhagavad Gita, which consists of five main gathas. There are five gathas, and they are arranged in a metric way. So that sometimes, you see, if you read gatha like this directly, you might get confused. Because sometimes Zarathustra is addressing Auramazda, he asks a question. Instead of Auramazda answering, Smint Almighty intervenes and she gives an answer which is a tangentially different from the question that Zarathustra questioned. So that in seriatim order, if you were to read Zarathustra's gatha, it is difficult to grasp. Not like the Bhagavad Gita, which is in a very systematized order, a very orderly way. Because it is a very, very, very ancient gatha. At the most you can say Gita is 5,000 years old. But the one about which we are talking is more than 12,000 years old. And therefore, we will have to excuse me if we land ourselves into controversies. Now, directly coming to this, Zarathustra's literature. You see, as we said, first there was what is called Sanzal, as the Svibi says, the ancient language, the mystery language, which was known only to the few mystics, was Sanzal, which became Zand, Zen, or Dhyana, meditative language, language of the of the yogis, which is verbally transmitted by guru to pupil. Then came Avastha, which has become the first vocal and a scriptural language. Which an Avastha is an ancient Avastha and a modern Avastha, just like even Sanskrit. There is an ancient Sanskrit and a modern Sanskrit, a later Sanskrit. Gita is a modern Sanskrit, a little later Sanskrit literature. So like that, Avastha also has its ancient, so Gathas are the most ancient Avastha language, written in Avastha, ancient Avastha language. Therefore difficult to decipher them. And it requires a mystical length of mind. Erastara Parvala is one of the authors who says this, for each shloka he says, I have to meditate for hours together, seek inspiration from above to be able to translate each shloka. And a great Gujarati Kavi Khabardar, he took 10 years to translate only one gatha, first gatha. It took 10 years, word by verse translation, and then he again went into this mystical state and gave out what is his translation. So we are now entering into a realm where there will be a lot of controversy, but we can sum it up in a very simple way in this present lecture, whatever time that is allotted to us. So now we said, if you go into the history of Zarathustra, the very word for instance, there is a conflicting of words even, Zarathustra. Zarathustra means Zaratha means golden, Ustara means light, from the word Usha, now Sanskrit word Usha or Ura, or star. So Zarathustra means the golden star. But then later one says they translated as a golden camel keeper of the golden camels. Because that also later translation was very much correct. Because Astara also means camels and golden camels. So he was the keeper of golden camels. So he was something like a shepherd who was looking after camels. And in fact Zarathustra calls himself shepherd at one place. He says, I am a shepherd of all those beings. And I am looking after beings. In other words, he is protecting human beings who need protection. So that Christ calls himself the Holy Shepherd. Christ also calls himself the Shepherd. Like Gopala. Krishna calls himself Gopala, who is a protector of cows. And actually, the call out that, you know, when the earth call out to Auramazda saying that, please save me because lot of corruption has taken place on this earth, it is described as a cow calling out. And then in reply, he says, bring a protector who is a good shepherd. Again, the word shepherd is used. So in that sense, Zarathustra can be called a shepherd. So now you will find that starting point for all world, many, many world religions is this crisis. When the earth is full of suffering and crisis, as it happened to place of Arjuna, very recent event, that Arjuna felt the crisis of conscience and that he went into Vishada condition, a state of despondency, and an answer to his questioning, Krishna came up with Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, you will find that Lord Buddha was suddenly faced with the crisis that in the prime of his youth and the beauty of his life, he was confronted with the crisis of pain, suffering, disease, death, decay. And in that confrontation, he sought in search of an answer. Zarathustra also felt the same crisis. Then he was thrust on him to go down and help mankind. He says, I am inadequate, I am not yet ready. So much so that he went into hibernation, he went into isolation. He went into a secret place. And those 10 or 12 years that he spent, nobody knows what happened during those 12 years. These are the secret years of his life. There he meditated on Ramasda and conversed with him and brought back credentials, a seal on his forehead that now you shall go back to the world and teach the teachings of Zarathustra. So having got that credential from the high source, now he was ready to approach King Yustaspa, the first king to which he approached. Now coming to this crisis, I think we'll read it very rapidly. This is from Yasna 29. It is not that in your hand, but we'll read it rapidly this way. Unto Avramasda, the soul of Mother Earth complained, violence, vice and wickedness enmesh me everywhere. For me there is no protector other than you. Reveal therefore to me an excellent shepherd. Then the Lord asked Asha, which is the cyclic law. He said, I can't do that without consulting the law. Avramasda has to consult the law. That means here, this law is greater than Avramasda. Now this is funny, but we'll come to that. Who shall be her savior? Whom dost thou wish to be the Lord and the guide? Who shall repel the host of passions and liars? Then Asha, which binds all life into one, may reply, Avramasda judges what is best. So happen unto us whatever he wills. Means he asserts that there is a divine will, we must surrender to that will. Then Avramasda spoke, whose all-pervading breath quickens life, then Avramasda definition, whose all-pervading breath quickens life. So Avra means the Lord of life. He says, one such is present here, is known to me, the only one who kept all the commandments, his name is Zarathustra Spitama. Spitama was the personal name of Zarathustra, because Zarathustra is a title. Who is willing to proclaim Asha, the Mazda's eternal law. Therefore we grant him power of speech. At this, the soul of the Mother Earth seeks grace on Zarathustra and his helpers. Not only Zarathustra, but on his helpers. Now this means that Zarathustra was not working all by himself alone, but the help of a inner group of his helpers, an esoteric group, which is working silently along with him. Three of them are mentioned in world scriptures. And asks, when will Asha, Vahumano and Zarathustra return to us? Now this Asha, Vahumano and Kshatra, these three you will come across again and again and again in Gatha. These three great powers, these three great Ameshas Pentas, these three attributes of Avramasda, these three transcendental virtues. So at various levels, these three will come into picture. You will come across it again and again and again. Right from the very first yasna. So when will, and the earth mother said, when will these three powers come and descend along with Zarathustra? So Zarathustra alone cannot come without the help overrooted over by these three great powers. Because these great powers descends on him overshadows him, throws the protective hand over him. Ashavaista, Bahumano, and Kshatravairya. Do grant unto the glorious, then again he says, do grant unto the glorious brotherhood of Zarathustra and his healers. Zarathustra and his healers. Zarathustra is not alone, that he is accompanied by other individuals who are supported him. But they remain in the background. They were silent beings. That means they came after him also. Grant him recognition, that is the seal of recognition, so that the new teachings may spread far. And in response to that, the first sermon that Zarathustra gives, in which he tells the mission, his own mission. And he says, now. Look here, he says, now. And the word he used called Atta. You will find the word Atta in various Sanskrit literature. Particularly, Yoga Sutra Patanjali. The very first word he uses, Atta. It means now, Vikrat Sanskrit. But it is actually a benediction. So any holy being who starts with a mantric benediction, which is not given out in writing. So the word uses called Atta. It is a kind of a benediction. So he uses word Atta. Now, he says, unto eager listeners will I speak. Of the twin spirits, he is going to speak about five doctrines. And he sums up. I am going to speak on the five doctrines of Zarathustra. And we are going to expound on it within these 30 minutes. Doctrine of twin spirit of Mazda. This for the wise. He says, this for the wise. This is highly metaphysical. This is only for Pandit. This is only for Vidu Sahay, Vidwan. He will talk about this doctrine of twin spirit for the wise. And I shall sing hymns on Avramasda and the praise of Vahumano. Now, sing hymns of Vahumano, of Avra, means I will describe the nature of Avramasda. I will also describe the nature of Vahumano, the great Lord Vahumano. And I shall explain the sacred lore of lore means tradition of Asha. That means that tradition was there before him. So that you may grow perfect and that you may develop soul evolution and attain to the light. So that even he tells you the goal, the ultimate goal of humanity is to attain illumination. Raucha Bish. And then amazingly he says that I leave it to you to choose. What I am going to say, please don't accept wholesale, or not on authority. Don't accept me on authority. Right in the very second sloka he says, don't accept me on authority. This is how he says. Hear with your ears the highest truth and consider them well with thoughtful mind before deciding each for yourself. Between the two parts. Now he says, gives you the choice. And now another amazing thing he puts. The final choice. That means now you are going to choose between the two parts. But such a choice will come to the future humanity where they will have to confront the two great forces of nature. The dark, the left hand part and the... So that the new age, before the new age is dawn, the whole of humanity will one day be divided into two camps, the left hand and the right hand. And then they also will have to choose with the use of the higher manas, the Vahumana. Before the great new age will be ushered in, wake up, now you wake up, because now you start before you come to that age. Alert and spread Avra's word. In other words, he mentioned that this Parshokarati, the new age of renovation is going to come in the future times when the whole humanity will be divided into two classes. When the fifth, now is the present fifth sub-race, but when the sixth sub-race comes, the humanity will be completely manasic. And when it is fully manasic, it is capable of choosing very accurately what is right and what is wrong, and then consciously choose the right-hand part or the wrong-hand part. Here is a conscious choice. That will happen in the very, very future state of humanity. And he predicts it in future. And now comes about the doctrine of twin spirits. And this is how he tells you. The doctrine of twin spirits, which are the co-workers at a cosmic level, at human level, they are good and evil. Higher mind and the lower mind. But at cosmic level, they are the two tremendous forces of nature. The creative and the destructive. What he calls life and non-life. This is how he says. And when the twin spirits did foregather, they gather together because they are inseparable and create at first life and non-life, serving creation's purpose. In order to serve the purpose of unfoldment, purpose of manifestation, first two great forces were first came into being. But then, yet, in each human being, thoughts, words and deeds, these two show themselves as the conflict of good and evil. At cosmic level, this thing happened. But in human level, there will always be conflict of good and evil. Of these two, the wise shall choose rightly, the unwise go astray. Again he says, and when the twin spirit did foregather, become inseparable, and create first life and non-life, serving... In each human thought, words and deeds, these two shall show themselves as the conflict of good and evil. These two the wise rightly choose, the unwise go astray. The dark ignorant is the mind that clings to false. But brightly shines the mind that holds to truth. Now here the word mind is used vaishtam mano. Vaishtam mano is not the ordinary mind, not only the higher mind, but the mind which is already united with the divine light. This is the light, mind which is illumined, which is not only purified mind. You see that in Zoroastrian, according to Zoroastrian teaching, there is an ordinary mind, the regular, conscious, intelligent mind. Then that is what is called the mind which is purified by the effort of Asha, the Ashoi. But then what is called the illumined mind. Now illumined mind means it is ready to receive the light from the higher source, which is now an open mind, mind which has already opened itself to higher light. So this illumined mind is called Vaishtam Mano, which is now capable of, which is capable of holding truth of Asha. So with this background, we can say that Zarathustra constantly evoked the spirit of this seven Ameshaspentas. So now we go to directly, instead of going to the doctrine of twin spirit, which is already we mentioned, that at cosmic level there are these twin spirits, the life and non-life, the Spentamino and the Angramino, and they are two menus, they are counterbalanced one with the other, they are co-eternal, co-evil, they are co-partners. And that Goethe says that they still produce good, although they are scheming one against the other. Ultimately they produce the good, ultimately they produce the whole manifestation. The creative forces and the destructive forces are there in nature, which are so juxtaposed that balance is given so that creation can continue. So you require these two forces in nature, at natural level. But at human level, they are the good mind and the Angramino is called Deluda. See, Angramino at one place, Zarathustra described as Deluda. It deludes the mind. That is, it is called Mara, as Buddha says, this the Mara which snares you. It's a snare which deludes the mind, which comes as a very glittering prize. We likes to accept this, it looks very priya, but it is not fair, it is not proper to receive. So it's a deluding mind, it's also called, it is also at the lower level, it's called druja or wicked. But then it is a tempter. And therefore the ultimate pursuit of ethical pursuit consists nothing else but actually the conquest of that tempter. And to do that we will have to invoke the higher mind and Asha. That means Zarathustra from time to time, why does he invoke these great powerful three forces? Though he was himself an enlightened being, in order to fight against the tremendous druja, tremendous evil that was there at that time. He came at a time there was the darkest period in history, and he wanted to wipe it out. To do that, he required the power which and help from higher sources. So he is invoking those three emanations. And these emanations are the emanation from the spirit of Spentamenu. The Spentamenu is the spirit of Avramasda. Not only Avramasda. Avramasda has within him a central light, which is the spirit out of which these true menus come into existence, out of which these seven Spentamenu come into being. These seven, among them is Avramasda himself. So this is where difficulty comes up. That Avramasda, the supreme, Avramasda in manifestation. And then Avramasda, he says, I am the ego seated in the heart of all beings. That third level, the transcendental level, the immanent level, and the individual level. So that each time when we read Gatha or a Gita, we will have to take into account when Krishna says, I am that supreme spirit, whether he means at a transcendental level, whether he means now immanent, or whether he means as an avatar in front of Arjuna, or whether he means is that ego which is seated in the hearts of all beings, that luminous center in the hearts of all. In order to emphasize this central luminous being, Zarathustra appears before King Vistaspa carrying fire in his right hand, raw fire in his right hand. It looked like a miracle. But this is merely a symbolic, it may have actually happened, that kind of phenomena may have taken place, but it represents that he is able to carry that fire in his hand, that fire of life. Fire represents life, wisdom, knowledge, full illumination. That he has now reached full illumination, that he is capable of giving that teaching to those who are ready to receive them. And there also he appeals to that King Vistaspa, because Vistaspa hesitates. It is his wife, Paruchisti, forgotten his name, that queen accepts him and persuades the king to accept him, and thereafter his ministers accepts him and the whole Zoroastrianism spread in that fashion. So he constantly invokes that great spirits of particularly this three, Amesha Spintas, and then in Gatha he describes these three great attributes. These great attributes represents three great cosmic power. They also represent soul power, and they also represent ordinary virtues in our day-to-day living. So if we go to this, what is called the ethics of Zoroastrianism, then we will have to turn to the three mantra, which is there in your hand. Which is, first is the doctrine of Asha, that is a fourth quotation. We'll leave out the first three quotations because this tells you the history of the first Zoroastrian, which is called Magayanism or Mazda Yasnidin. This doctrine of Asha he tells this way. And by the way, these three mantras come again and again throughout Gatha, repeatedly given again and again. Beginning of Gatha, end of Gatha. First Gatha, second Gatha, third Gatha, fourth Gatha. And you will come across in all Zoroastrian prayers, these three scriptures, three mantras are uttered. And they are used as mantra. The first mantra is, righteousness is best of all good. It is Ushta, it brings happiness and illumination. This goal of Ushta, this goal of illumination is attained when one lives righteously. For the sake of highest righteousness, he calls it Asha Vahishta, highest righteousness, supreme law of Avramasda. That is, you live righteousness not for the sake of mere goody-goody goodness. Because the goal is to achieve that highest state of righteousness, that highest state of luminosity. Because Asha is also called Ardhibesh, Ardibes is great fire, which is worshipped in fire temples. Ardibes is worshipped in all Zoroastrian fire temples. The fire in Zoroastrian fire is called Ardibes Amshaspenta. Why? Because Asha is worshipped. So to worship Asha means to worship virtue, to worship righteousness. Second, just as Ahu, the sovereign lord, is all-powerful, so also is Ratu, who is the law-abiding, law-giver, the teacher, by virtue of his store of Asha. Just as the great sovereign law rules the whole cosmic kingdom, just as the earthly law, lord, the king, monarch, rules over the kingdom, similarly, a Ratu is given the authority to rule over the hearts and minds of the people by virtue of his collectivity of Asha. That is the highest state of holiness is there. That is in him. And he says the gift of Vahumano, the superior mind, is the reward for the works done for the love of or in the name of Mazda. Now this is exactly similar to this Bhagavad Gita statement, almost similar to Bhagavad statement, that the reward comes. The sacrifice, that is in the same chapter, they said the sacrifice through spiritual knowledge, this sacrifice is purified from all these different kinds of worshippers are by their sacrifices, means act of sacrifices, are purified from their sins. But they who partake of the perfection of spiritual knowledge arising from her sacrifices pass into eternal Supreme Spirit. So that this act of sacrifice purifies. And what happens in that perfection of spiritual knowledge arises. So that knowledge becomes a child of loving deeds. That knowledge, that work becomes worship. That work becomes worship, and that knowledge and that works that is performed with a view of an act of devotion to Avra Mazda as an act of offering, those acts now becomes full of fire. They are the act of sacrifices which result in the gift of Vahumano. The mind awakens into knowledge spontaneously by itself, by this act of sacrifices. And finally, the gift of Kshatra. The Kshatra is creative power, or the spiritual power, descends upon him who becomes the shepherd of the meek. That means whoever who does service of humanity, whoever tries to protect poor, simple human beings, who strives to protect fellow human beings who need his help, whoever does that, he receives power to do greater service to humanity. In order to serve humanity, you need power. And to gain that power, you have to start doing service of humanity. And he who serves humanity gains an inner power to go on with greater and greater acts of sacrifices so that he receives this ultimate kshatra. Kshatra is that spiritual power which opens up the inner eye. And then the last shloka says, and then of course here the ideal state to which a man can reach is described, the ideal man. Such men and women we adore and we worship, whose every act of worship is alive with Asha, who are in the sight of Mazda Aura as best and the noblest of mortals, such truly are the spiritual leaders of mankind. Now these are the punyatmas whose atmas are full of punya. They have collected such punyas in their life that they are capable of sharing the merits of so many lives with others. So the Zarathustra emphasizes the ideal man that is in front of us. And he repeatedly, this is the Yange Hatam, which again comes at the end of every gatha, announced and pronounced at every gatha, and that ideal state is pronounced. And then describing Vahumano. What is this Vahumano? That Vahumano is not only good mind, pure mind, honest mind, chaste mind, but a superior mind. A superior mind is an intuitive mind. A superior mind which has got an insight, which can see things directly, intuitive mind, which is an illumined mind because it is illumined by his own higher manasic nature, where the light of Buddhi shines on it. So Vahumano has got these two levels. And Vahumano is a means by which you reach higher Vahumano, Vaishtyam Mano, it is described. From Vahumano to Vaishtyam Mano. From the higher mind, the pure mind, to the illumined mind. So this is how Zarathustra distinguishes between a pure mind and an illumined mind. So Vahumano at times he uses as a clean mind, honest mind, integrated mind. And other place he describes it as illumined mind. He says the path of Avramasda or Vahumano, the path of Avramasda or Vahumano, that one path pointed out to me is the ancient teaching of all Shoshan. So he says, now I'm not going to give you something new. It is an ancient path known to all. And at another place he says, there is only but one path. That path is that of holiness. All other paths are no paths. He says, just be holy and forget everything else. Now what do you mean by holy? Now this is the whole difficulty among the interpretation of the word holiness. We'll come to that very immediately. And then this most precious gold, sure is gained by deeds of love as inspired by Vahumano. So it's when we are allowing our action with the help of the higher mind, it's not done merely impulsively, not by merely using our intellect, but by consulting the higher mind. That is, what is right we have to consult, wait, and find out whether it is in line with the cosmic law, the law of our own being, whether it is in line with that. We have to consult that, and then when the light comes, this is the kind of choice you have to make. For the most so, now there are four ways we are doing this good work. For the most serve of a fruitful Mother Earth, what they do? They serve the fruitful Mother Earth. They help Avramasda in his divine plan of regenerating nature and man. They fulfill Asha's task of supreme law in becoming one in harmony with the law, and they also do thy will. So this is the nature of the man of Vahumano, that he is working with Mother Earth. That is, purity of mind means helping Mother Earth and keeping it pure. This is one of the doctrines, this science of ecology that is now coming up, to keep ecology pure. Zarathustra assured in this philosophy of ecology, he says, that you have to keep this earth pure, these five elements must not be polluted. So he includes purity, not only purely physiological purity, what is called hygienic purity, keeping your body clean, not only keeping mind clean, but keeping your natures clean, so that you are not supposed to pollute earth by misusing earthly things. And then purity at a still higher level is the purity of consciousness. And when there is a purity of consciousness, there is an unfoldment of higher faculties in mind. So that all the great poets who are inspired, they come out of that purity of consciousness. Because when in that state of pure consciousness, they are able to create great poetry. Great poetry are the works of pure minds. At least at that time. Some of these poets are, in their ordinary conditions, were really ordinary people. But in that state of ecstasy, in that state of higher consciousness, in that state of masti, as the Sufis would call it. Sufis call it masti, that kind of intoxication, that higher tantric state, they are capable of producing things. So this can be done when the woman of the pure mind comes. And then comes the doctrine of karma. And that's what he says, Rathustra says, that very simple, happiness is unto him who happiness gives. It's very simple. Do good works and you will receive compensation. Do evil and you will receive compensation. So the doctrine of karma is introduced again and again in various forms in Bhagavata. But here he says, he who brings to others happiness himself gets the light within. May Avramasda grant highest illumination to one, through whom illumination comes to another. In other words, anyone who gives light to another receives higher light. In another word, if you are a good teacher, you actually learn by teaching. By act of teaching, anybody who sits here and gives a discourse, he learns more than he can give. Because sometimes spontaneously new ideas occur to the speaker himself. Sometimes the speaker gets amazed. Many, many speakers experience it. That he is amazed that spontaneously a new idea occurs to him, and he gives it out. So that while the act of teaching, an enlightenment comes. So this is how he who gives knowledge receives knowledge. For progress and for upholding Asha's law, I pray for renewed life and soul power.